Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for us to give you some commentary, analysis, and perhaps even a little insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here in the studios of WAMC in Albany with my colleagues Stu Shinsky, executive editor of the Poughkeepsie Journal. Sir.
How are you, gentlemen?
Doing all right, thank you. And Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio, columnist, commentator, professor emeritus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
What?
I can tell you right
else.
Now, I am in mourning.
In mourning?
Yes.
Mourning?
The yogi.
Oh,
yogi.
Yes. We do.
I
yes.
love the yogi.
Yeah.
And you know what? In the two New York tabs this morning, he virtually forced the Pope off the first five or six pages of both newspapers because these editors are not stupid. They know how we all felt about Yogi.
Well, I don't know. What was your decision, Stu? We had a tough time deciding which photograph to put where, Pope and Yogi.
You know, the thing with Yogi is that from a newspaper perspective, he died, obviously,
right.
Unfortunately. He died at an inopportune time.
The phrase is, he didn't die on our cycle,
He did
right?
not die. He died right after many printing presses were done.
Uh-huh.
So it really became a story where you had to be digital first, and mm-hmm. then the next day in print, when frankly the whole world knows, you're telling the story. So that's something editors always think about and worry about is, yes, someone will always pass, and it's always a tragedy, but can you get it in the paper?
Right.
Especially when other people are printing your paper.
Yes.
So then you end up with the old term being a second day story.
Yes.
And people often complain about this, as though we were the newspaper of record. Well, no, you're writing a more analytical piece, a more mm-hmm. thoughtful piece, a local perspective.
Well, the perhaps. Times had about five different pieces.
Sure.
You know, on Yogi, at least on the digital that I read, is extraordinary. I tell you, I love the fact that you guys are talking about this because here you are having to make these decisions. You're the guys who make the decisions. And you have to intuitively know, and this is why it's not so good to be young. It's better to be a little older. Because you've been around for a little while.
I keep telling myself that.
Yeah, right.
You know, and you have a sense of things. So now, on the one hand, Yogi, Pope. Yogi, Pope. You know, and at least in the two New York tabloids, Yogi comes out
Yogi
on top. Wins.
Yogi,
you know,
is beloved.
Well, now, Alan, let me just point out that you often on this show refer to sports coverage as being the politics of distraction, mm-hmm. as though it is an intentional effort by the media to take people away from the important issues of the day.
In my case, it succeeded.
Hear that, folks. He yields.
Yeah, and one other quick thing about Yogi. I mean, it was known that he had been ill for a long time. Right. And I mean, I know at the Poughkeepsie Journal, and I'm sure at the Times Union, there was lots of content that had been created a long time ago that was just waiting.
Isn't that
unfortunately?
Yeah. Now, obits are often pre-written, right?
Because oh, yeah.
You know that
obituaries,
coming.
Columns, retrospectives, photo galleries. We had built in advance. We had videos done in advance. With Pete Seeger, we had content that waited 7 years. That we kept updating, that went through three computer systems. So this just doesn't start when the person actually passes. This planning is done far in advance.
Well, mm-hmm. you know, that's an interesting thing that you raise about Pete. Because as you know, Pete was my great hero and I loved him.
Yes, lived
and,
a wonderful,
and,
long
and
life.
Did great things for this public radio station. But the one thing is that the first day after he died, there was an obit, and maybe I'm just wrong about this, in the Times. But it wasn't as much as I would have expected. And the next day, there was much more. And maybe it's just my perspective because I loved him so much. But there was some catch-up going on.
Well, more likely, just telling you how newspapers work.
Sure. Thanks
more
for doing that.
Glad to help, since I know generally Alan sees conspiracies in all these things, you know.
That's nutty.
Well, we have the conspiracy committee that handles that in our newsroom.
That's right. Yeah, sorry.
No, I don't think it was conspiracy. I just don't think they figured it out.
I think it was just deadline.
It was probably A, a deadline, or B, a space. Maybe the Obit desk. You know, the Times has an actual full Obit department of several
department
people.
Department of Obit.
And I think perhaps they might not have had as much space allocated for that particular day, or there were other stories competing.
To which I say, tough darts.
Well,
make
that
the
can
space.
Happen. You know,
Sometimes you can.
And some days that happens, you know, when there's just such a big story that it just blocks everything else off, or you just have to lose. We have a lot of stories. This happens all the time. Stories that would be front page stories get bumped to a different page, or you end up saying, you know, that can hold. I've got a great story right now that
about the water filtration.
It was going to be used about a week. Yeah. No, a story having to do with, you know, the continuing issue of the die-off of bees, which is a significant issue around here.
I don't know. They keep stinging me.
Well, there may be something to that. They're in the absence of sweet stuff, they look for shark talk, right? But a boom. But we have this great story, and I can't wait. I'm holding it for the front page because there's also great photography, really wonderful close-ups of bees on plants and stuff. And I don't want to waste it on another page, but you wonder, well, is it going to get old? And what's really funny about this is, in a newspaper, once you put that story out there on the front page, miraculously, the TV stations do stories about the same thing. Imagine that they've been working on two. How could that
be? Do you think...
No. Coincidence, Rex.
Yeah, yeah.
You know how I love you, Rex, and you know how much I appreciate everything you say. But I think this equation is beginning to change.
Aha. Uh-huh.
This business. I think in the old days, you're absolutely right. No question. You could hear the guy on the local station turning the pages as they were reading the stories, your stories. But I think when it comes to NPR and the Times and national reporting, I do think... that there's a little bit more, one steals from the other takes reference, so that I think it may be changing.
Well, it's especially true. We have great news organizations like NPR, which has a huge staff, and they actually break stories and find stuff that other people care about.
Which we pay for here at WAMC.
Well, I hope so.
Coaching a million
because why do you think people listen to the station?
Because it's a great station.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
So
that's a good thing.
Please,
by the way, what is this about? Is NPR abandoning the West Coast?
Yes.
All Things Considered on the Weekend has been based out in L.A. And now it's not going to be anymore?
First of all, the answer is yes. They had taken on Weekend Edition. They wanted to show, obviously, the flag, which was that we care about the West Coast or the Left Coast as much as we care about, the East Coast, and we're East Coast oriented. And apparently it didn't work out. But they got a new head guy. One of our friends, Rex, Michael Oreskes, is now the
head of news, basically, for NPR.
Yeah, and a guy named Jarl is the head of NPR. Here's a Shark Talk rule. You never get credit for what the guy before you did. Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So that if the guy before him said, well, okay, we have to show more flag down there, but I'm sure they have other indices to see whether it was working or not.
Of course, it's always expensive to maintain separate offices. You probably used to have bureaus.
We used to have outlying bureaus. We have about eight of them here at WMC.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Vermont Bureau. We have the, imagine all of those people running around in each of these bureaus.
But you've actually been smart about this. You station your bureaus in places where you don't have rent,
to pay.
Right? Right. You don't have to pay. Yes.
A brilliant strategy.
I woke up one day
and I said, oh, we had Western New England College first, and New Paltz, and that worked so well. They get something. They get mentioned, of course, obviously, and deserve to because they're giving us the space. And we can use their students, and we can do internships, and we can do things like that. So it was perfectly symbiotic, and it really has worked out.
That's a good thing. Oh, but actually out west, it's not only NPR that's cutting back. You know, we talked last week about some of the cutbacks. It's been a tough week for newspapers.
Yes, it has.
LA Times and the other Tribune papers.
Daily
apparently
News.
Heading to big, the Daily News, losing some of these great reporters, and the New Orleans Times-Picayune. So these are cutbacks caused by the continuing effect of the digital revolution, wreaking havoc on the revenue streams of traditional media outlets.
The thing is, we know it's happening. We know it's coming, and yet we're always surprised. When it's coming, my son, who lives in New Orleans, and when they cut back on sports this time, they took their major sports editors and made them into general assignment, or one guy made him into general assignment reporter. And, you know, my son, who I love very much and who's very bright and has all kinds of degrees, And he got the tweet, and he said, "Disgusting." Well, if you're the editor, you have a different perspective than the publisher. Then if you, because
yeah.
some publisher is looking at you or business type in a suit and saying, "This does not meet our budgetary projections."
Yeah, it's not that. It's honestly not disgusting. It's sad, and
I love the way you guys are both saying, "Yeah."
It's real. It's what it is, and you know we are businesses. There are bottom lines to worry about, and that bottom line fuels your future. Rex, you once said this, that your publisher said this, that there's no profit, there's no content.
No, it's actually more alliterative. He says, no margin, no mission. So there you go. It's a good point. And
well, what's that coming down the track? A train. That's what it is. It's a train coming down the track. So here you guys are. You know, we all know.
Sorry, I looked across the studio to watch where you were pointing.
It looks like a window.
All know the train is coming down the track. What do you do? Mm-hmm. It's got to be terribly frustrating and alarming.
And people complain about it, of course. I was just reading a piece on the Huffington Post written by a former Newsday and Daily News writer, Bob Liff, who's now a PR guy. Went into PR about a decade ago after he got laid off for the second time. And he was complaining about this, how terrible it is that these layoffs have happened. But what is the solution? If there isn't the revenue there, what are you going to do? Especially if you're at the Daily News where you're already losing money. How much are they supposed to lose?
You can buy the Daily News. Of course, you have to pick up a lot of millions in debt.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And ongoing obligations and pension and so on. Anyway, if you want to share your thoughts on the media issues of the week, media at WAMC.org, media at WAMC.org. Alan Shartok, Stu Shinsky, and Rex Smith here reporting to you from the posh studios of WAMC on Central Avenue in Albany.
Palatial, actually.
Palatial, yeah.
Can I go back for one second?
Hold on. We haven't finished yet.
Oh, yeah, I want to go back for one second to this discussion of the frustration, the train coming down the track, newspapers. But there's always been an assumption, has there not, Rex and Stu, that sooner or later, advertisers would be willing to pay for the additional eyeballs you are getting from digital, right?
Many do.
Yeah, they do.
And is there a progression that we see now that that ability to pay for that is coming up to the point where that would be when I was yelling before, what do you do? That would be the solution.
That does take place. It is happening. The question is, in the past, those print advertising offerings were so effective because that was the medium. Now it's such a fractured medium. There's so many places to look for news. There's so many diverse social media opportunities, websites, blogs. There's not that captured audience.
Well, yes and no, Stu. I mean, if I'm living in Albany, I know the Times Union is the game in Albany. If I'm living in Schenectady, it might be the Schenectady paper. If I'm living in Poughkeepsie, it certainly is the Poughkeepsie Journal. And if I wake up four times during the night, it's always going to be that I check the New York Times first. And they're being very clever now. You know, it's like, where's Waldo? The ads are all over the place, and getting rid of those ads are very hard. You have to look for the X.
It is hard. The Times is different from all the rest of us. But the fact is that the newspaper is a great amalgamation of all kinds of stuff, crossword puzzles and news stories and comics and Dear Abby. And people who bought the paper went for everything. And now you can go to look for only what you want. And that's why the economics of it don't quite work as well. That's why we're getting so much less per eyeball for digital as for print, because people are going to just what they want. And so there is, as Stu says, there's a vast range of places people go for information, and you don't get them on the individual news stories.
Also, Rex, we've talked about this 100 times, I'm sure, but there is a difference in philosophy of each of you guys in terms of what people should get digitally, how much. You know, and people, they try different kinds of things. So my newspaper that I write for on Saturdays, the Berkshire Eagle, has a second product called No Inky Fingers, which allows you to have everything in the newspaper.
It's the digital edition.
Yeah,
replica edition. We all have that.
Yeah, we all,
Right.
It's basically you just shoot a picture of the page, and that's that's a nice transitional product for readers who really like print, but they're gradually getting it on their tablets and so on.
Right, but they also send out every day their top headlines. And I know this is true, you can find anything in the paper, but you got to really know what you're doing.
Well, I mean, it's such a generational issue now. I mean, I grew up in a house house where we had 3 to 4 newspapers every day. Now kids grow up in a house with 3 to 4 computers and 3 to 4 smartphones, and they're getting their news at their fingertips sitting at McDonald's or in school between classes. They just don't have the newspaper as part of their life as it was for our lives.
And because we know what handheld users want as opposed to what tablet users want, or as opposed to what people who get it on their desktop want, because we can tell what they go for, you fashion the product differently for the handheld. Well, the handheld readers are going for a much quicker read. They like lively lifestyle news more than, say, a
more
print
video.
Reader, more than even a desktop reader. So your mobile edition is going to be different. It'll have different stuff prioritized and be presented differently than the print edition, no inky fingers, the facsimile edition, or the laptop.
And you can tell by who's reading what from your analytics. So what you think your traditional news sense is, the next generation of readers may just say, we don't care about that.
Yeah. We don't care about news.
Tell us about that reality starlet just was kissing so-and-so. Or even on more topical news, maybe climate change. That's a segue, by the way, Rex.
We were trying before, and Alan took us back.
Maybe climate change or a local issue. It's the definition of news. The way the news is delivered, that's the empirical change that this industry is grappling with, and that goes to the bottom line and raises the question about the number of reporters and what you can do.
But that also is so interesting that you say that, because there are always stories about what people are using. When we all had the desktops in the beginning, then everybody used their desktop. But that's goodbye.
Right.
Because you had to be where that desktop was.
Yeah.
So, now your phone goes with you.
Right. It's constantly changing. As recently as 3 years ago, maybe even 2 years ago, I remember sitting in this program and saying only about 13% of handheld users are using it for news. Now, 80% of the people who have hand devices are actually using it at some point for news. So we have to cater to them now. And it changes constantly. So you have to adjust your stuff constantly. So.
And you have to have mavens, people who understand this.
Well, you have to have the tech gods who really know how this works. But we're sitting here sort of like lamenting the future and, you know, praising the past. But, you know, there's a lot of great content in a lot of great newspapers, and frankly, even newspapers that aren't that great, that's content you're not going to find anywhere else, because there's a lot of dedicated people getting it done. And frankly, newspapers still get ripped off by radio. They still get ripped off by internet sites. The content is valuable, worth it, and frankly, it's worth paying.
Are there still unions at newspapers?
Yeah, some.
Some newspapers.
Yeah.
The reason I raise that is because I know that in the old days, there were objections to reporters who had to carry cameras and, you know, do all of the work. And now those days are gone. Everybody has to do everything, and there's no two ways about it. And some of the most interesting stuff is the videos that keep coming up of something that you're actually seeing while it's happening. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, live streaming is really a cool thing. And we're going to get, you know, that'll just grow and grow.
Yeah.
And that'll be a fun thing to watch. But it's exhausting. And, you know, reporters ask the right question when they say, what's the priority? How do we decide what to do when we've got, we just had this conversation in our newsroom the other day, when you want me to quickly tweet what's happening and call the web producer to get a bulletin up, when you want me to take a picture with my iPhone, and yet you're also going to expect me to write a thoughtful piece for tomorrow's paper, and I've got to be pursuing that person to interview that person while I'm tweeting, while I'm calling, while I'm taking a picture. Tell me what the priority is, reporter
says.
So
what did you say? That's the way the darts fly?
I said, it depends.
Yeah, it depends on the situation.
It depends. Yeah,
it really
does. That's why we have humans and not computers.
No, but it is interesting because, you know, the Pope comes and you go to the special channel that CNN has set up and you watch the Pope getting off the plane. But you also can go to one of the major newspapers and just click on and say, watch the Pope get off the trip.
Right.
So now there's no difference. This convergence is happening between the various forms of media.
And so the newspapers then try to make money off this to support their journalistic enterprise by other opportunities. The Philadelphia Media Network, which is the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Daily News, and Philly.com, are creating a coffee table book out of the Pope's visit so that they can make some money off this to, you know, pay for reporters, right?
And these can be quite lucrative. We have done those at the Poughkeepsie Journal, not on the Pope. We've done 6 books, I believe it is, on history, and they're in demand. People like to purchase them. They're a revenue stream. Frankly, they're not that difficult to do because you're already creating the content for your daily coverage, so you repurpose the content, you dress it up, you design it, you got a book, you sell it, you got revenue.
But that's so interesting that you say that, because this week we all read about the fact that in the beginning everybody was going to digital, and the idea was that major bookstores were closing up because people weren't going to read books anymore. interestingly, they're reading them again.
Yes.
And that is fascinating to me. If it was just old guys like me, that'd be one thing. But it's everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And bookstores are morphing. Now they're not just going and buy a book. Now it's sit down,
get a
cup of coffee, look at the magazines, meet somebody, bring your laptop. If you're there, you're more apt to buy, so they want you to be there to begin with.
Didn't you want to say something about something else, Rex?
My climate change segue failed miserably.
It failed. My previous one did 10 minutes earlier anyway.
All because of Alan.
No, climate change.
No, I just actually wanted to talk a little bit about language because I was hearing an NPR story that I thought was quite interesting about complaints that have come to NPR from people saying, why are you using the word migrants instead of refugees, referring to these people fleeing?
We get it all the time on our
We get the same thing. And here comes an AP memo about climate change. AP, of course, does a style book, and they have updated their style book to say, for those who don't accept climate science or dispute that the world is warming from man-made forces, they say, use climate change doubters or those who reject mainstream climate science. Avoid using the word skeptics or deniers.
Here's what I say to them. Tough noogies on them. Who died and made them the head guy and said, you know, you can only say this or that? I don't like it. I think it's imperious and condescending and stupid, and I don't want them to do it anymore.
How do you fairly feel?
You know, the mild-mannered Alan Chartok.
You know, the roots of this, it's as you point out, it's the nuance in the phrasing. And honestly, this is just a different topic, but it's an old discussion. You'll remember years ago where there were, quote, anti-abortion people.
Mm-hmm.
And they complained about that, and maybe rightfully so, that it was a negative inference, and that became pro-life. Mm-hmm. And I can sort of see the discussion point on that. That said, is it a vast conspiracy to paint people in a negative way? No, it was a word choice. And I think this here is, okay, it's helpful, but it's different words in the same sort of
agenda. I don't find it helpful.
Well, it is. It's meant to increase fairness. You know, the word denier does sound...
well, that's exactly what it is, Rich.
Pejorative.
These are people, I mean, the scientists are all agreed, we have this thing, and along come these people who poo-poo it, and they are deniers. No two ways about it.
They reject mainstream climate science. Which is the term the AP urges you to use?
Well, I urge them to go into a hole and not come out.
That was said positively.
There you go. Absolutely. By the way, I think it's the other way around on the abortion debate. I think the problem is that the activists were using the word pro-life, and in journalism, that really needs to be phrased opponents of abortion rights.
I think Stu is right. I think it started the other way. It was anti-abortion going to pro-life. Now saying, as you said quite correctly, it's really not about pro-life.
And we say abortion rights activists on the other side.
Yeah, it's progressed several times.
Is that in the AP style book?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm. And
well, they got one thing
with
right.
respect to NPR's story, they're saying that the word migrant is the broader term. Refugee is really applicable only to people who are fleeing from
political oppression.
Or certain death. And many of the people fleeing have made a conscious decision to leave. And so it's a more generic term and therefore more accurate.
And words count. I mean, we're talking about individual word choices here, but they count because someone can hear a word and perceive a bias or identify what they feel as an agenda. And honestly, it's probably not that at all. It's just a word that was maybe chosen without much thought or thought and decided that's okay to use. So the words do count, every single word.
And if you don't think they do, people hit us up with it. I'm sure it happens to you guys.
You're out
for dinner or something, and people come around and lace into you because of something, what seemed to be a casual word, especially in headlines, you know, because they have to be so compact and they have to fit just perfectly. And, you know, this is going to be a 60-point bold in 14 picas, and boy, that's hard to write. And so no wonder headlines draw people's ire because, you know, they are a capsulization of a thought, and often they don't have the nuance that phrases do. So
it sounds like he went to Harvard or something.
Blah, blah, blah. like Rex, we were drilled about the AP style book and how it was, in essence, our journalism Bible, though I still quibble with their hyphenation of teenager.
Oh, can't stand that. These are things that we really worry about. All right, that's all we can tell you, folks. Don't hesitate to share your thoughts. Dr. Chartok, it's been wonderful working with you as usual today.
And I think you guys did very well today.
Why, thank you.
Let me try, thank you.
That's very kind of you. Stu Shinsky from the Poughkeepsie Journal. Wonderful to see you, sir.
Mr. Smith, a pleasure. Dr. Chartok, as always.
I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. Thanks for joining Alan and Stu and me on the Media Project.
Hold the press, hold the press. Extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now, newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people.